The Men of 8 Gang Podcast for Saturday, September 6th, 2008.
And the crowd goes wild.
And they do. They just go absolutely crazy. Yeah. And it's normal cast of characters on, and Garrick Van Buren will be joining us shortly. What were you going to say?
I thought Graham was going to say something. I didn't hear it.
Oh, I was going to say, go Gophers. Waiting for that Gopher game tonight. Of course, we can't get it on ESPNU, but I'm going to try to find a sports bar somewhere.
There's a good excuse to go out to a bar.
Yeah, well, you know.
Honey, I got to go out. I'm sorry. I got to see the game.
Yeah, right. Got to see him play Bowling Green.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I cannot wait until that new stadium is done.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be awesome.
No kidding. Well, let's start off. Last week we were talking about software as a service and Harry Debus from Lawson and all the things that he was doing. And I know that I'd sent you guys a note about some discussions with VCs in town that I've been having. And it's about making money on Web 2.0 startups and applications. And, you know, I got to tell you that there are just so many people that are doing great startups and they're having a real tough time. But the biggest difficulty that people seem to be having is, how do you sell it?
Mm-hmm.
How do you drive adoption?
Virally, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah, through social networking. Why not?
Well, the only downside with viral marketing, and I don't disagree, Tim, I think the biggest challenge with viral marketing is the time. It's almost saying it has to grow organically, which is a very, very cute thing to say, but it's a very time consuming situation. So, is there a method other than the viral and the social? Is there a way to use traditional media to drive new media startups?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think, I was alluding to this in our last week's discussion is, you know, there are cloud computing or SaaS, software as a service, companies that are going out and hiring salespeople to sell this stuff.
Well, that's true, but even the enterprise salespeople are having a tough time with everybody's knocking on the front door, and especially in IT, where chief technology officers and CIOs and so on, their assistants, because I played this game and I've been there, will tell you things like, you know what, he's not going to talk to you because CEO of company X called. He didn't even have time for the CEOs of these companies. And it's almost like there's too many solutions out there and too many people going after the same buyers. And I know Web 2.0 specifically is more, you know, for small to mid-sized business and individuals and so on, but you know, the challenges are still there. I mean, even one place.
Hello.
Oh, hi,
hey, Garrick Van Buren.
Garrick Van Buren joining. How you doing?
Doing all right. How are you guys?
Good.
Good.
We're talking about, Garrick, we're talking about selling cloud apps, about selling your hosted applications and the challenges of doing so. So one thing, Tim, you brought up viral marketing about driving adoption and, you know, being involved in networks and so on and getting the word out. Do you think that's really the primary mechanism today?
Yeah, I think that a lot of smaller companies, and let's ask Garrick what he's doing with Collect, which I think is all social networking based. It's, you know, taking advantage of those networks and participating in those discussions. And, you know, over time, that actually, you know, gives you a lot of users, I think. And I think it's easier if you have a freemium type of a service as opposed to something that's maybe only for pay to do it that way. That's not to say that there isn't a place for TechCrunch 50 and, you know, Demo and South by Southwest and kind of doing that as well.
I mean, especially if you've got money to burn and you got to get rid of it quickly.
Yeah.
So have you done anything?
That's the key.
Have you done anything, Garrick, for Collect that's been not social networking?
No. It's all of the marketing, and I can... all of the customers that Collect has right now, all the paying customers Collect right has now has all come from some sort of social marketing, you know, person to person, word of mouth conversation. Some of them I can point to directly, but it's all been relationship building. And I'm sure that from what I've seen, it's usually about 3 months between when somebody starts using Collect and when they say, oh yeah, I need to pay for this. This is that valuable. Or it goes, it's either that or people say, nope, this is valuable. I need to pay you as much money as I can right now. And there's really nothing in the middle. I rarely have somebody who right off the bat, you know, pays the lower number. If they're going to pay right off the bat, it's going to be the higher number. And if they're going to pay the lower number or even the medium number, it's going to be 3 months of trying it out and kicking the tires.
Okay, but what would happen if a company in Indianapolis called you and some guy said, hey, I've been using Collect, I love it, and what we'd really like is we'd like to have our own version of it and host it ourselves and reskin it, and we'd like you to come down and do a demo and pitch us on it and give us a price and all of that. How would you approach that?
That's fantastic. Is that something I've been thinking about? A number of those attributes I think work really, really well. The skinning already exists on the paying version. People being able to use it in the same way that they use Basecamp, absolutely. That exists today. And I'm positioning it as a complement to many of these tools. A separate, distinct install just doesn't really work. To me, to load it up on your servers, that doesn't really work because that breaks a lot of the, not necessarily collaborative, but aggregation stuff that's within it, right? Yep. In terms of the importance ranking, I need everybody to be on the same install for that to work best.
Well, but what about actually physically doing the transaction? You know, doing the demo, working through a sales cycle, doing a project plan, doing all the things that are necessary to support a sale. You know, even if it's a $25 million company that wants to take advantage of it.
I don't know that all that is necessary. To be completely blank and to be completely blank, i.e. naive, no, and blunt, to be naive and blunt, no, I don't think it's necessary. I don't know that those traditional software sales cycles are something that are A, required or B, necessary to get these kinds of sales. Now, they might be, and for me to really heavily pursue those types of clients, I need to, the potential sale needs to be far more than, $50 a month. Right, I'm going to need to see a lot more zeros to make that sort of investment in it. And I don't really, at this point, necessarily need to. Now, it would be awesome to get just one of those types of clients. And I see getting one of those types of clients being just a little bit more than the types of marketing efforts that I'm doing right now. Now, yep. To get a lot of them, yeah, I completely agree with you. But it's not, Collect isn't structured to support that right now.
Well, I even look at, okay, Graham with DoApp and Phil with Local Tone, Tim with what you're doing with the wine industry, and then the clients that I'm working with. That's a little bit different because I'm not, you know, product centric. But it's a matter of how do you get the word out? How do you package it? How do you do the transaction? Who's selling it?
Well, ultimately, we are, if we're selling our expertise, and I found that getting together in kind of live seminar formats has been the most popular way to, talk to new customers, get introduced, and start that conversation, and, usually new clients come out from that, from those kinds of settings.
Yeah.
Plus, there's good just plain old word of mouth, so they see something happening, and they kind of want to do that, a similar kind of thing, too, so... The more work that you do, the more you're embedded in the industry, and obviously blogging helps as well get the word out, as people are using search engines to find stuff now.
Yep.
Yep, and Twitter.
Yeah.
Don't forget Twitter.
Well, I think that Tim brings up a very interesting point here as far as selling any kind of application or technology or any, the best way to do it is in person. And that is sort of a blessing and a curse. I mean, I think that the quickest way to get somebody to adopt something that remotely resembles tech is to sit down and show them exactly how it works. I know I think that's just human nature. If somebody's saying, okay, you do this, rather than just read an ad or see a tutorial or whatever. But I think that Tim brings up a very interesting point of, you know, you've got to really be in front of people, explaining and quote unquote selling. Go ahead, Graham.
I was just going to say that Phil and Garrick do a good job of getting up and demoing things at these small gatherings, you know, 50, 75 people, these social media gatherings or various associations that have monthly get-togethers. You got to be able to get up and show it and talk about it and promote it in front of these groups. And if you don't have a guy like Phil or Garrick that can do that, then go out and get somebody who can, you know, because that's what works. You're exactly right.
Or hire a guy like Phil or Garrick, yeah.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and they'll pimp it for you. There you go.
Well, actually the automakers, use people that they hire to stand by their cars and...
Oh, sure. Well, it's an interesting thing because, we talk about what, you know, Garrick and I have done with some of the things that we're building and doing, you know, but that's a very small scale. At least from my standpoint, that's a very small thing. But I think to get to, you know, to try and get to critical mass in a fairly rapid way, especially a rapid enough way to satisfy anybody that may invest money in whatever venture you're doing, I think that I still wrestle with that. What is, because I come from mass media, you guys know that. I mean, in broadcasting, it's when you crack open the mic, you're talking to hundreds of thousands of people all in one shot. Now, all of them aren't going to be interested in what you have to say. But again, that's a mass way of marketing something. How do we get to that point? Is there a way to speed up the quote unquote sales cycle of these Web 2.0 enterprises, these Web 2.0 applications and tools?
Sure, buy radio time or sponsor podcasts. How's that?
Yeah.
Well,
what, Phil? Though you bring up a really great point because I've been seeing some really cutting edge screencasting that's been done that's been very to the point where people are going through bullet points of their features and they're showing they've got little video snippets that are maybe a minute long. So rather than take a tour that might take you 10 minutes to get through. And have to wade through all of it or scrub through the video. You can watch just those things that you care about. And so people are, I think, coming up with some pretty interesting solutions to kind of cut to the chase and then having the ability to pick up the phone and call someone, you know, or do live chat. Because I keep thinking about scale, about how do you scale?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about scaling. What do you mean by scale?
What I mean by scale is... going back to Foldera, talking with them when we were out in Boston at this conference, Richard Lusk at the time was wrestling dramatically with, he had 15 pretty strong, warm leads for enterprise companies that wanted to have him private label Foldera once they fully launched. And he said, I don't have the bandwidth. I don't even have any people that can go out and do that.
But he was trying to hire some at the time, wasn't he, Steve?
Yes, he was, in fact, trying to do that.
I can think of one in particular.
I don't know. but that was his problem. The problem was, even 15 opportunities, a guy couldn't handle them.
Yeah, yep.
So are we...
I can completely see that. I couldn't handle that right now. I don't know that I want to handle that right now. Now, if I had hundreds of thousands of dollars that said I needed to handle that right now, I would probably try and find a way to do it. But I don't know. To be straightforward about this, my goal for Collect is to get 1,000 customers and just be happy with that.
Mm-hmm. What are you at right now?
Let's find out.
Let's go to the big board.
There's drama on the Metabate Game podcast.
12.
Number is
12.
Hey,
so, 12. Yeah.
And you're talking 12 paying customers.
Yes.
Because I know, I can think of 12 people that are using it right now.
Yeah. Right. No, that's okay. What I'm. You know, that's.
You're talking about the paint customers.
It tells me the number of paint customers. Tells you the number of paint customers.
Can you tell me give me a percentage of paying to actual users?
The ratio of paying customers to people that use it regularly, 1-to-1.
Yeah. It's 1-to-1. Okay.
Yep. I can go through this. I can go through the sign-in logs, and you're going to see the paying customers, you know, almost every day. Mm-hmm. And the non-paying ones, they just quietly disappear.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the thing here is maybe, and I guess I'm not getting a real clear answer or feeling from any of you guys about, you know, where. What exactly we can do to speed up the sales cycle of this new media or this web 2.0 stuff. I'm not getting a real clear saying, okay, well, this is the magic bullet. I mean, it used
useful?
To be for, well, to be, you know, to be, you know, in the old days when you wanted to sell your car, it was pretty straightforward. You bought TV and you bought newspaper and you bought radio. Okay, there you go. And you advertised it and the people would come. Yay. And you would move product. Now we're talking about a lot of different products out there now, the things that are being, you know, they're popping up, you know, every minute online. So how do you get people to know about them quickly? We've talked about some very small, you know, relatively smaller steps as to what we're maybe accustomed to in the mass media world. So maybe the answer is, and I'll throw this out there, is that the sales cycle is just plain slower. That's all there is to it.
No, I think that you could. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Graham.
I was going to say, I think you you have to do a little of everything. I mean, you have to do video demos, put them on YouTube. Startups can do a lot of things to get the word out that don't cost very much. I mean, you can go to sites like I was just on one this last week, Vader TV out in the Bay Area, and you can upload a video describing who you are and what your product is and do a demo on there, upload it for free. I mean, you know, Garrick, I'm curious, have you put any demo videos up on YouTube about Collect?
No, that's one of the things that keeps getting very high to the to-do list, is sitting down, recording, and walking through, little tiny snippets on different features. And as we've been talking, I've been adding these ideas to the Collect Wiki. So
good.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, that's one thing I'd like somebody else to do for me, in all honesty.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I've got to have somebody that likes to do that and can do it well. And, you know, it doesn't have to be all that professional, but it's pretty easy to do, to do a little video and upload it. I mean, there's lots of places where you can do that. And there, as I say, there are places just for startups that will happily take your videos or your written description of what the product is and, you know, use them all. There's another one called Killer Startups. Any startup can submit their information to Crunchbase and hopefully get approved to be listed there. And the problem is what you end up getting from a lot of this is salespeople all over you. But like on Killer Startups, there's a way to kind of prevent that. Buy the paid version, and then they don't sell your name to all these people that are trying to sell startups and all kinds of services. But so I would not recommend the free version of Killer Startups. I would recommend the $50 paid version. And Crunchbase, I think, is totally free. I don't even think they have a paid version. But as soon as we listed ourselves on that, we got, you know, like 50 calls from outsourcing companies in India, you know. So you have to watch out for that. But you know, startups that don't have a lot of money, they have to leverage and use all these free or low-cost opportunities to get the word out. I mean, it really doesn't take that much effort or time or money to do it. And then, you know, blog and Twitter like mad and, you know, go present wherever you can get an audience. And yeah, the local groups are nice, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50 people at a time. But, you know, maybe you got to try to get speaking gigs at some of these larger events and get out there, at, you know, at an O'Reilly event or, you know, submit a speaker proposal. They're all the time looking for them. I get emails every week, you know, submit a speaker proposal for such and such an event. Steve, you passed me one on that iPhone Live event.
Yep.
That O'Reilly's doing, and I don't see much upside in that, though, because, I don't know, they're asking for companies that don't have apps in the App Store yet, at least for that launch pad thing that they said. They're asking for companies that don't have apps in the App Store yet, and they're the only ones they want to feature. And I emailed them, and I said, well, wait a minute, how do you know their apps are ever going to get onto the App Store? So why would you feature them then?
Right.
So, anyway, but there are opportunities. You can apply for these things. You might have to apply for 5 of them to get accepted once or something. But
And it's pretty clear, I think, from what you're saying, it's fairly clear how those places are making their money.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you get a speaker slot at one of these larger national events, they normally don't charge you to come to the event. They let you in for free, but you still have to buy a plane ticket and a hotel room, you know, to get there. But, you know, that can be money very well spent. I mean, obviously you're going to get a huge amount of exposure. Certainly the 50 companies that got accepted into TechCrunch 50 are going to get a ton of exposure. But, you know, if you listen to them, about 1,000 applied or something, you know.
Yeah.
Not that much, but certainly hundreds and hundreds applied for those 50 slots. But there are plenty of other good smaller events that are held. Well, how about our own bar camp kind of events? Those don't cost you anything.
Well, and I like what you said, Tim, about the social publishing tools, because what I think, or not social publishing tools, but social media specifically. Because when I look at the products that are out right now to create screencasts and to get the output, I mean, tool. Now this is Mac, but you know, there's Camtasia, there's Adobe Captivate on the PC. On the Mac, there's iShowU and ScreenFlow specifically. There's a new tool, and I'll put this stuff in the show notes. But there's a new tool from DV Creators called DV Kitchen, which is a, you know, once you're done with your screencast and you export it as a, you know, .mov or something, that you can then encode it, transcode it into H.264, Flash, FLV, or Windows Media, and so on. And they
What did he just say?
Yeah, right. Cute. Flash video. But so you can actually export it that way, and this tool is like $80. And I spent $400 on a codec tool not too long ago. So the costs are coming down. They've got, you can output this into a Flash player that you can then embed on your site, so you don't necessarily have to go out and upload your content to one of the providers. And you look at how much easier this stuff is, and carving out, you know, either speaking or carving out a thought leadership position with your blog. There's a lot of possibilities.
Yep. Yeah, I think there are a lot of great tools out there now. And, you have to leverage as many of them as you can, you know, don't leave any stone unturned. And you're going to find people, you know, it's going to happen. You know, the more you can do in the shortest amount of time, the better, you know.
Yep.
But again, you know, it comes down to this is a longer turnaround cycle than the old mass medium world. I mean,
is it? I don't know.
I don't know. It strikes me that yes, you can do this sort of stuff virally, and take into account here, I'm probably being the devil's advocate, guys. I'm just trying to make that transition from mass media to social media. It's a much slower process. But I mean, we've talked about train going by.
Yeah,
watch
just
out!
Just because they look out.
Yeah. I'm in a van down by the river. Actually, I am. I'm staring at the Mississippi River in Little Falls, Minnesota.
And a
train's
river.
Going by, and I'm gonna catch it back to Minneapolis.
Yeah. So that's what I heard. I thought what that tin can was, it was a can of beans that you had for lunch.
There you go.
I just had some, and I got no shoes, and I just got my MacBook and my iPhone, and you know.
I have is this MacBook and this iPhone and this startup that I'd like to get funding for.
And this paddleball and this ashtray. Yeah.
I got a little knapsack thing on the end of a pole. You know, I got it over my shoulder and.
Well, thankfully, you have 3G access. My goodness.
And this chair. But anyway.
After paying for all this, I can't afford a ride to Minneapolis, so I'm coming. No,
I'm just thinking that we're talking about, you know, the fact that you were getting up in front of a group of 100, or even if you got up in front of a group of 1,000. I mean, that's you're talking about really counting on that group to tell others, to tell others, to tell others. So clearly it's going to be a lot slower cycle, right?
Not necessarily.
I don't necessarily think it is. No, it's viral. I grant you, viral is, it's hard to say you're going to do something and make it viral. I mean, I was talking to an agency this week, one of the guys at Fallon, and he said there isn't a day goes by that some client calls and wants to know how to do something viral. And it's like, you know, the agencies don't have the answers. I mean, the consumers decide when something's going to be viral, you know. You can't force it.
Well, and that's the thing that you got to keep remembering about viral is, you know, you've got to have a willing host. All right, because it ain't going to go viral if nobody cares about it. So, viral is, I think it's one of those catch-all phrases of, you know, if I put something on YouTube, it'll go viral. And it's got to catch. It's got to have a hook. It's got to make something happen. So,
you know, hey, guys, let's segue into, because there's a couple of more big topics here, but one of them is social publishing. WordPress clearly is moving in that direction with BB Press and with what they're doing to WordPress multi-user, but Drupal is also repositioning the platform as a social publishing platform. And even though I don't really know what social publishing means specifically, is it multi-authors? Is it user-generated content? Is it the ability to package up content and data and deliver it and allow others to embed? You know, there's a lot of...
Can we pick a definition for the sake of this conversation?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm asking you. Pick one of those three.
You want me to pick one?
Yeah.
I think it's tools to engage a community, to get people to participate, to get users to participate, and multi-authors, et cetera, rather than just, I have a content management system that makes it better and easier for us to publish and push stuff out at an audience.
Sure.
Wow.
It's about managing communities.
Say that again?
It's about building and managing communities.
Yeah.
Garrett, social you were going to say something?
That just makes me feel kind of icky.
Why does it make you feel kind of icky?
Well, because that's not the... okay, so one, I've always had a problem with this idea of user because I don't believe they exist. At best, there's this user.
Oh,
they don't exist. They are like Bigfoot.
Hey, wait, they do in the drug community.
Sure. And if that's the metaphor we're going to use, I'm going to pick a... I would rather get funding in that direction.
I guess I'm a little confused, Eric. Tell me, what do you mean by you don't think user exists?
There are no users. There's people and
there's
people
individuals,
read.
And
people and they read and they write and they talk to each other. And at their core, all these technologies do is make it easier to have better, more intimate, stronger person-to-person relationships.
I think you might be stretching it a bit to say a person-to-person relationship.
No. No, I don't have relationships with organizations. I don't have relationships with people.
Well, it's interesting that I think it might be a little, we're kind of arguing semantics a little bit by using the word user. I think it's an easy term for people to default to because it's like, I've got this thing that you use to do something. So it's easier just to say user. But You know, it's like we used to call listeners, you know, in radio. They're listeners. Well, they're also
am I an automobile user? Am I a water faucet user?
Sure. You're a drinker, you're a driver. I mean, that's all semantics. So
yeah, but it's completely one-sided, two-dimensional, and cardboard. I mean, if you want to actually be useful in those contexts, we have people. And they do things in these contexts with these things, right? And all of these things are about, you know, increasing relationships. They're not about, you know, I'll take it this far. I have an insurance agency, a company I use for insurance. It doesn't really matter what their name is because I go through a person that I love for that stuff. So, you know. I don't love her. Love her.
You love an insurance agent?
I have a great fondness for my insurance agent.
Must be a family member.
No, it's not.
Never heard anyone say that before. But yeah,
I haven't. This is the thing, right? I haven't had to talk to her in years. But if the whatever reason I might need to give her a call, I look forward to having that conversation with her.
So it's really the Clue Train Manifesto. Mantra, which is, we're not eyeballs, we're people. There are people sitting out here.
Yeah, we are. And I think we should stop acting like there's somebody looking at us, because it's all just us. Well, however you slice it, there's no us and them. It's all just us doing stuff.
Whoa, you just blew my mind.
Well, to get us back on the topic, I think that what's happening with both Drupal and WordPress is that they're less about building websites or building blogs and more about building rich internet applications now. And, you know, there's people that are using both platforms to make social networks and other kinds of social internet sites. And, I mean, much the way that Rails is used to build those same kinds of things. So I just see these as just new frameworks and new tools to build these things, not that they are some kind of big mega trend.
Yeah, just add water sorts of community things. Still got to do
that. It's usually a little bit more than water, but if you put these Lego pieces together in either Drupal or WordPress, you can actually build some pretty surprising, very rich websites out of them with only a little bit of bailing wire and duct tape added to kind of knit some of these things together. The only thing that really remains, the kind of the holy grail, is e-commerce, which I think Drupal has a lead on WordPress or anybody else as far as these open source frameworks are concerned. But you know, that's just a matter of time before that's fixed. And maybe it's Magento, maybe it's somebody else that kind of comes up. But I believe that in the future being the next year or two, that we're going to see most websites built with these open source frameworks.
I would agree. Absolutely.
I also agree that we need this framework that WordPress used to be. So I'm all for WordPress going the direction that it's going, but we need WordPress as it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's
the 5-minute install and the super simplicity and those sorts of things.
Yeah, that's why Matt still has all of the original archives still at wordpress.org. I mean, you can go and download WordPress 1 if you want.
And I think this ties awesome.
And it still runs fine.
And I think this ties into the larger conversation about software as a service as well, right? Because, you know, I could throw something up on WordPress.com, and they've got ways to take money and to pay them for that service. I could, and unless I restrict my install to WordPress.1, I'm gonna, you know, move along with their upgrade cycle. And excuse me, unless I branch or fork my site off, you know, away from theirs, they're still driving the bus. So,
well, right. And just because, you know, WordPress has all these new features doesn't mean you have to use them. You can still use it as just a blog if you want.
Yep, exactly.
So I don't see that the evolution of the platform has really changed much from its roots. If you just want to host a blog, it's great for that still.
Yeah.
Well, plus I was just looking at a presentation that Dries Buytaert did at the Drupal conference over, I think, in Belgium. I don't remember correctly. But it was about the next evolution, and it's about data and about being able to move data from place to place. And I don't know if that necessarily means microformats or what, but clearly to move it away from just building interactive websites to, as you described, Tim, really building web applications that people want to do stuff with. I can't tell you how many communities I've been invited to at CollectiveX and Ning and places like that where people, you know, come in, we want to drive this great, robust discussion, and it just, nothing happens. Nobody joins. Nobody participates. Nobody comes there. So you can't just run a community with great software. There have to be, as you described, Gary, people encouraging others to come in and so on.
So what we said is that it's getting easier and easier to create ghost towns really quickly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you're not willing to roll up your sleeves and do what's necessary to get people involved.
Mm-hmm. And that's slow going, no matter how you slice it, right? Because you've got to change existing behavior and change direction and all those things. And that's why I'm far more interested in projects and tools and efforts that allow that let me use my existing tools in a new way rather than making me use a new tool, right? So how can we create a community of people that, hey, they've already got blogs or they've already got places where they're comfortable publishing? How do we tie those things together in a way that creates this new community, right, that exists on top of all those things rather than forcing those people to go to a new place?
Yep.
It's why you see so many Facebook groups and pages being created, is mm-hmm. that everyone's on that platform, and you can have those niche social networks within, you know, the greater social network of Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So,
ephemeral too, which
is as I look at niche social networks, and I'm a member of a few of them, and I just don't see that there's a whole lot of there's going to be a whole lot of people that are going to want to have 15 different sign-ons to different social networks, because mm-hmm. it's just, you know, you're gonna burn out. I mean just being on one or two of them, you get burned out after a while. So that's why I look with a skeptical eye to things like BuddyPress, which is a version of WordPress multi-user that's being set up and pitched as a social network platform, which is basically this WordPress plus a whole bunch of different plugins and a theme that makes mm-hmm. it look sort of Facebook-y. I just don't see a whole lot of need for that kind of thing, because, you know, there's already a dominant social network, and, you know, there's already white box solutions like Ning out there to build a niche social network out of. So I just don't see, you know, why you'd want to build one out of WordPress or why you'd want to build one out of Drupal, even though those platforms provide great tools to do that.
Well, don't you think it's because, I mean, people want to, at the end of the day, incorporate something into other things that they're offering. So if you've got a website with e-commerce and you've got your blog embedded there, wouldn't it be also great to engage your community, your customers and your prospects and so on, directly in the same site?
Yeah, it would be easier for tracking conversations too. That's one of the challenges that I have with Twitter right now, is that tracking is you know, turned off, and it's near impossible to follow if you're following more than just 50 or 100 people. So mm-hmm. when you're following hundreds like I do, it's nearly impossible to track conversations. And so I see that maybe some of the microblogging services might get forked off into a niche microblog that's around interests. So for instance, we all use Twitter for wine-related conversations. And there's this, we have monthly wine Twitter live tasting events, which go over a couple of hours on a specific day. And, you know, it's just, I think stuff like that maybe is where the niche gets split off, so you don't have all the noise of, you know, the other people in Twitter talking about something else in your feed. So.
GarageBand, I rerouted audio, and so we can start again. This could be a good segue into maybe the last little piece here, which is the implications of Google Chrome and the announcement of that. And would love to get your thoughts about what you think about what they announced and where they're going to go with it and what it means.
I think it's Safari for Windows.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I only have Safari for Windows. Because underneath it's WebKit, so yay for another browser that uses WebKit. I've got a project long-term that uses WebKit, but so I'm excited for that. But, you know, it's another browser for Windows, which is desperately needed, I think.
Okay. I see it going way, way beyond that because it's a multi-platform, but it's the whole discrete nature of everything running in one of those tabs, meaning that if one of the tabs, one of the applications in one of the tabs crashes, that it doesn't bring down the whole browser, which is something I experience every day with Firefox.
Oh, well, this, so on my end, I rarely use tabs. If I do, I have a, you know, just a handful open, and I don't have that problem. But I don't use Firefox either. I just not a big fan of the browser.
Okay.
So, you know, if this is a better Firefox for Windows, awesome. You know, but I'm not a big fan of Firefox.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see where they take this with Google Gears. You know, is this going to be something that you'll be able to suck down application data or your application functionality and your data and run it offline or have it cached on your local machine? And really, is it going to give competition to Microsoft Silverlight and Adobe Air within the rich internet application space?
Well, I think that what the first release shows is very tight integration with the other Google applications and some different browsing paradigms, which I think are you know, needed now. I mean, we've had the same browsing paradigm since Mosaic 1.0, and now at least Google is coming out with something, you know, different, where you don't have this notion of this address bar. You have a notion of a what looks like an address bar, but it's actually a search bar. And you know, I think that longer term, that having great domain names is going to be less important. Mm-hmm. So domainers actually maybe seeing their time go away because of, you know, the value of having a great domain name will become less as people get more used to just using search as the way to find stuff as opposed to typing in URLs.
That's an interesting perspective. I hadn't even thought
somebody
of that.
Don't tell Mike O'Connor.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Well, you know,
tell him. Just tell him to sell now.
Yeah, sell now.
there's a sale at Mike's. You know, speaking from the, you know, and I am clearly the more mainstream user of the group, I think. I kind of look at this as I'm the Joe Sixpack voice here, and I look at it and I go, okay, whatever. I didn't rush out to get Chrome and load it up and see what it looked like, because I'm not sure, for me as trying to keep an eye on the average user, I don't know if they see a need for another browser. Now, there are plenty of reasons for another browser, and you talked about them here. You know, whether you're using the web more to do all of your computing via web and from the cloud, yes, you want to be able to have a stable platform for individual applications. But for the average guy that sits down and wants to get the forecast for what's going on, or a movie, or rent something from Netflix or whatever, I don't know if they're rushing out and saying, ooh, I got to have another browser.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that if Google comes up with either a, you know, kind of version of Linux that's built around Chrome and, you know, their apps and start selling computers with them on there, that Joe Sixpack, you know, buys a computer to do web browsing and email and such, and really could probably care less if it's running Mac OS or running Windows. They just want it, you know, they want it as an application, you know, as something to, a tool to get something done. Just like I don't care if my, you know, what operating system my DVD player runs. I just want it to play DVDs on my TV. Mm-hmm. So if they were able to do that, then you're going to find Chrome that may be the standard web browser, which is the same reason why Internet Explorer has such huge market share still, is that it's the one that comes with the computer, and a very small fraction of users actually download alternative browsers.
Yep.
I think the one thing that Google brings to the table for its browser that nobody else brings to the table, except, well, maybe Microsoft, but that's a little bit tarnished right now, as far as just because they've been around for so long. But I think the one thing that Google brings to the browser market is simple. It's Google. It's the name.
And I think that's as much of a strength as a weakness.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I think that the one thing that they're clearly the dominant player in the online world from anybody's perspective. You know, you put Google on something, it's going to be adopted quickly.
Well, I think we're moving into a different paradigm of software sales. And this kind of ties back to the cloud computing app discussion, which is, you know, in the first generation, we had this notion of paying for applications. And, you know, maybe you get updates for a particular period of time after that, or maintenance or something. But you owned it. You own that application, and you don't necessarily have to upgrade it after, you know, when a new version comes out. And I think we're now at a stage where we're seeing more of the subscription service sort of idea, where if I pay my $10 a month or $12.95 or whatever, like with TiVo subscriptions, I get that service. So I get the software for a subscription kind of fee. And I see that is moving along, and that this Google initiative to kind of tie things together around a browser is it makes a lot of sense, because their core business is search, and their interest is to try to own that whole interface. And so I see this as their first step into really getting into the computer operating system business. And maybe this is all it is. Maybe it's just a cross-platform browser, and it ties all their services together, and it's free, ad-supported.
Yep.
So maybe that's their end game, is to try to compete with subscription options from Microsoft and Apple and others with a free ad-supported model that a lot of people are going to, you know, it's going to meet their needs and they're going to like.
Oh, that's fantastic. Tim, I completely agree with you that when Google enters the space, what they do is dramatically raise the bar of what's expected of a basic service. I don't know that Apple or Microsoft are actually their competitors in that sense, but I think it's more like I think their competitors are the people that Google generally buys for those dollars. So if Google takes an app and makes it ad supported, I see them doing is cutting out those the independent software developers who are selling a monthly service against their thing, right? That, you know, the $10, $20 a month people are trying to turn their thing into an app or into a sustainable application and service and company. Instead of getting bought by Google.
Yep.
That's my thought. I don't see Microsoft or Apple in this space in any... I don't think they have been for the past decade, and I don't see them changing that. I see Adobe making a lot of interesting moves, but again, I think all three of those players are coming at it from a desktop app paradigm, and I think that's what's holding them back in a lot of cases.
Well, I think they're also coming at it from a device standpoint as well. I mean, when you see all the tiny little PCs that are being shipped, and the rumors of an Apple tablet and the iPhone and what that can do, and who knows if it comes out in a bigger form factor, is that there will be more and more demand to triangulate between your desktop, the cloud, and whatever you're walking around with.
Yeah, and I think that's why everything's going to be in the cloud. And it all comes down to how can the device that I have best present that cloud-based information in a way that's contextually appropriate and device appropriate.
Yep. Well, we should probably wrap up here, guys, but I just want to tell you a quick story about three buddies of mine, and this is from yesterday, and one of them sells cars at a local down on 494. And then one guy's a hardware engineer and the other guy's a software engineer, and they were heading to lunch and the right rear tire blew out.
Is this something I should be writing down for Comic Twit?
No, but
okay. It sounded like the setup for a joke.
No, like I would do that. So the guy that was the car salesman, he jumps out and he goes, "Looks like it's time to buy a new car." And the guy that's the hardware engineer said, "Well, let's first try swapping the front and rear tires and see if that fixes it." And the software engineer guy said, "Let's just try driving the car again, and maybe the problem will go away by itself." Yeah. All right. Hey.
I really thought it was a story. I was giving you a hard time about the joke setup because you do it. I know you have three friends.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. You're such a good guy, Phil. I know where you live, you know. All right, you guys. Well, have a great rest of the Saturday. Gorgeous day. And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
You too. Thanks.
Take care.